This was the sound last night in Istanbul, Turkey, as protesters in support of President Erdogan were rallying in historic Taksim Square. They were burning an effigy of this man living in rural Pennsylvania.
In such a horrible picture, it's not possible to talk about democracy anymore. It's not possible to talk about the constitution anymore. This kind of regime resembles more like a clan or a tribal administration.
He's Fethullah Gulen, the Turkish Muslim cleric in self-imposed exile who Erdogan blames for organizing and triggering the attempted military coup. When the BBC spoke to Gulen, he denied any involvement in the coup, but did not temper his criticism of the Erdogan regime. Asli Adintashbash is a journalist in Istanbul and a fellow at the European Council on Foreign Relations. She says there's a feeling of stalemate right now with the speed of events.
The government is blaming followers of a cleric who lives in the United States in Pennsylvania, but my sense is that it's a whole lot more extensive than that. And the reason it didn't work in the end was because at 4 or 5 p.m. on Friday afternoon, the Turkish intelligence got wind of it and therefore went to chief of staff and basically started mobilizing some units, and therefore the military was divided. But, you know, there's a lot we don't know in terms of who, what, when.
Would you say that people in Turkey view Fethullah Gulen, who is based in Pennsylvania, as you say, as a kind of Ayatollah Khomeini hanging over the head of President Erdogan? Or does he have a much lower profile than that? It's hard for Americans to understand how important Fethullah Gulen is. He's virtually unknown here in the U.S.
No, he's a little bit different than Khomeini, because here's a country that's kind of split in half between secularists and non-secularists. And I think that among the conservative base, Fethullah Gulen does have some following, but not the majority. And he's definitely been maligned. So his followers are, I would say, a couple of million. Perhaps 3-4%, even less, of the population, but they're placed in very strategic positions. This is a man who's been investing in education, in secular education. He's getting his followers to open up schools across the world, and he's also been encouraging them to go into government service. But there's been a very serious fallout with the government. The government has blamed corruption investigations of 2014, which have touched upon Erdogan and his inner circle on the Gulen movement and have subsequently put in jail many of the prosecutors, judges, and policemen that were involved in the string of corruption investigations. And they see this coup as a continuation of that.
One last issue. Essentially civil war in the east in Turkey that many people have been describing as an all-out insurgency around the Diyarbakir. Is this coup seen as something that will inflame that or settle that down? Would there be pressure to go back to a ceasefire, a truce, as was the case last year?
If the government is smart, they would definitely use this opportunity to actually go back to a ceasefire with the PKK and Kurdish militants that are fighting. But I think what happens in terms of the Kurdish insurgency and whether or not the government will go for a ceasefire will kind of depend on Erdogan's career plans. If he is willing to push for an executive presidency, sort of a U.S.-style presidential system, and go for a referendum around that, he may go with the Kurds, or he may go the other way and actually align himself with nationalists. He just does not have enough votes. I think he'll either pick the Kurds or the Turkish nationalists, and I think that's a very tragic situation for us. One of the main Kurdish human rights organizations that have traditionally looked after the human rights of Kurdish citizens has now come out warning the government that the coup plotters should not be mistreated. And these are a group of people that have been fighting the Kurds for the past 40 years. And now the Kurds are coming out and saying, but wait a minute, even if they may be guilty of a coup, torture and ill treatment is not acceptable.
Asla Aydintashbash is a journalist in Istanbul and a visiting fellow at the European Council on Foreign Relations. Asli, thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.